Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. It is Thursday, April 2nd. This is 2020, like it or not. I'm here today with two wonderful guests. I have John Martellaro with me. Hi, John.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Glad to have you. Also with me today, I have Dave Hamilton. Hi, Dave.
Hey. Thanks for having me.
Now, John, I want to start with you because you wrote an editorial yesterday about Apple and the, for the most part, we tend to think of them as impending, later this year, release of macOS 10.16.
Yes, and I wrote an article about how Apple might want to postpone that. I did not tell Apple what to do. I didn't say Apple should. I just made a case for everyone to ponder. The case okay. for Apple to postpone macOS 10.16. I try to avoid articles where I try to tell Apple what to do. They know what to do. And okay. they probably already are thinking about this.
Sure.
But I thought it was time to kind of lay out my arguments. And there were four. There's the argument relating to users, to Apple software engineers, to Apple developers, and internet loading. And okay. I kind of wrote a little paragraph about each one of those. Probably the most important one is for the users. You know, every year we struggle to deal with the new Mac OS X. It seems to come earlier than we'd like it to. After we go through the frenzy and tap dance of getting our new iPhone in early September, then all mm-hmm. of a sudden Mac OS X next generation comes along.
I would make the argument that yearly is earlier than we generally want it to happen at this point, but that's a story for another show.
And then there's, you know, the business of checking your mission, your workflow, your mission critical apps, and getting ready to transform over to a new operating system. And this just seems like the wrong time to be going through that. Apple normally does a preview at WWDC. And then rolls it out in late September, although Catalina was early October. Three previous versions were late September. And, you know, we don't know how long this coronavirus is going to last. I'll leave that to the medical experts. But I'm guessing that during the post-WWDC time, there will be people trying to download betas, even users on the developer program and public beta users trying to download 5 gigabytes and fussing with it. And it just seems like it's too much stress on us all, excuse me, psychologically, and a lot of stress on the internet. Plus, I had this wacko harebrained idea that maybe with the Apple software engineers working at home, they wouldn't be able to easily access the suite of test Macs to make sure that every version of their beta works on every version of each Mac that's designated as a supported machine. Now, there may be people who take the code that's been written by engineers at home and compile it again at work or deal with it, the binaries, and then, you know, have access to a laboratory room where they can test it on every Mac. But, you know, maybe they're doing that, maybe not. So mm-hmm. that's one consideration. And so, with engineers working at home, it's so you don't have that same kind of collaboration. You're not sitting around in a suite talking to each other, exchanging ideas so much. You're kind of just coding at home, and then that's that kind of isolation, even with great direction from your manager, often results in sometimes cutting corners, maybe not paying attention as closely as you might with some people working in collaboration. So
well, and especially for a team that's not used to that, right? Like Apple has generally not allowed most staff. There's certainly some staff that work remotely, but in, mm-hmm. in general, you know, their standard practice is, no, you do your work at work so that you're, you know, sort of immersed and mm-hmm. those quote unquote accidental encounters with your colleagues really do help the process along and facilitate, like you said, that collaboration and that sort of thing. We have to intentionally force that to happen here. We've been essentially for 21 years a distributed company. Mm-hmm. And so we're used to it. It's in our workflow, in our DNA, if you want to use that term. It's not at all in Apple's DNA.
no.
You know, not yet. I mean, it could be, but it will take quite a bit of intention and experimentation. And of course, experimentation involves succeeding and failing and learning from both to get it to the point where, you know, Apple is potentially as productive as they have been. So yeah, you make a good case for this. There's also the case, the flip side, John, is that, like, do we need a new operating system from Apple every single year? And my feeling on that is no.
No, we don't.
I don't know why it would be one thing if at WWDC we saw a 10.15, I'll say .5. I don't know, you know, where that would be, but a substantial, like, here's some like fundamental code fixes we've made to 10.15.5. Here's the stability release of 10.15, and it's called 10.15.5, right? Mm-hmm. And they've done that, you know, in years past, where they've said, you know, we've got Leopard and then Snow Leopard, and they, many times since then too, where it's like, this is a stability release. Well, I think it's the marketing, and Apple is a marketing company and they are geniuses at this, so who am I to question? But it is the marketing that says, well, let's not call it, you know, 10.15.5, let's call it 10.16, even though it's just a stability release of 10.15 or whatever. And, you know, marketing has served Apple amazingly well over the years. So again, maybe, you know, who am I to challenge that? But
Dave, there is an offsetting consideration.
What's that?
That's the roadmap.
Right.
You know, Apple has these technologies that they want to fold in over time, and they all have to work together. So on the whiteboard where they have the macOS roadmap, there's when and how are we going to feed in Metal? Well, we got to do such and such first. We got precursor things to prepare for. Mm-hmm. How are we going to get ready for 64-bit apps, and when are we going to fold that in? We got to get APFS in there somehow. Let's put APFS in High Sierra and there. And so you have this roadmap I envision that kind of dictates that sequentially new technologies are going to be folded in, and it makes sense to make them a new version.
Right.
Sure.
Right. Well, and the deprecation of some, but not all, of the kernel extensions that we discussed last Friday, I guess, that appears to be on track for whatever is next, be that 10.16. Certainly, I think from a confusion elimination standpoint, that kind of major change from deprecation, which means it will be going away, to end of life, which means it has gone away, that's way easier to do with a major version number, just so that you're like, well, what operating system are you on? Catalina. Okay, yeah, but specifically which version of Catalina?
Yeah.
Like that becomes a bit of a nightmare, to your point, John. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if the roadmap continues, maybe there is a 10.16 and it has, you know, fewer fundamental user impacting changes than it normally would have because of this. I don't know. I'm just, you know, like, yeah, it, as you bring these things up, it's not quite as simple an answer as it might seem on the surface. So
there's another consideration too that I mentioned, and that is developers. You know, developers have to respond to the structural changes and revise their apps, and they're kind of under the gun to do that. And the last thing you want to do is have Apple be shipping a new version of Mac OS 10 and then having everybody think, well, we got to go get that. Mm-hmm. And then the next day they call the developer up and say, hey, developer, my Zoom doesn't work anymore. Well, did you upgrade to Mac OS 10.16? Well, of course I did. That's what you do.
Right.
Well,
right.
No, you shouldn't have. Well, nobody told me I shouldn't do it. I mean, get that.
I mean, that problem is a longstanding problem, because as soon as Apple started having developer releases that were available, as you know, under your developer account, people started getting developer accounts, and you know, who were not necessarily developers. And when you have all of that underlying stuff that everybody needs to work on, like, I think one other reason that the delay sounds like a good idea is because everybody's working on the same code that they've been working on for the last year. So I would be much happier if this fall brought us a 10.15.5 than a 10.16. That was kind of my stance in reading your article, John, was I'd rather have a 10.15.5. We call it Snow Catalina or whatever, you know, the Service Pack 2 of
mixed metaphors,
Mac OS, you know. Yeah. well, Mount, oh, yeah, you know, Catalina Mountain back. was weird, you know, so
let's bring back images of Windows XP with service pack. Let's do it.
Well, but I mean that became the standard version, you know, SP2 was what you needed in order to do all the stuff you needed to do. And so like, I like the idea of let's just refine what we've got in Catalina. And it's a .5 this year because that lessens the load on people who are trying to put out new features. That lessens the load on developers who are trying to develop to keep up with new features, because everybody's in a new reality for the next however long. And we don't know what that's going to be. And we don't know what kind of impact that's going to have, just that there will be one on everybody's workload, work bandwidth, concentration level, life. I mean, there's so much other stuff that has to go into those equations right now that normally doesn't, you know. Apple has been content to steal summers from developers for years now, and it hasn't ever really been that big a concern for most folks until now. So I feel like there's definitely something to that.
Kelly, this is a TDO first. All three of us, the trio, agree 100%.
Well, I
don't know what to call it, right? But like, that's the a more conservative approach to a less dramatic, and I mean that in multiple ways, a less dramatic rollout of the next operating system would be good. A simpler change, more focused on just the things that it needs to be, and not look at all the glitzy bells and whistles. My guess is that there have been moments where Apple has felt trapped by their own accord, because every year it's like, oh crap, we got to outdo ourselves. We need to show people the new shiny, as well as giving developers the actual stuff that we really want to do. And not that the new shiny isn't part of Apple's DNA too, it is, but you know, they have now married the two together in a way that they probably don't always like. Yeah. Here's a silver lining style excuse to say, we're taking a breath on the new shiny.
Right.
We're focusing on stability because, quite frankly, that's what all of you really want. And we're going to go ahead and do that. Like, that's not a bad thing.
And so I like the optics
of that.
That was
the last sentence of my article. We could all use some macOS breathing room and stress relief.
Yeah.
And I like the optics of we're stepping it back. You know, like, we've scaled down DubDub this year. We're scaling down macOS this year. We're scaling down iOS this year. You know, maybe they both go to just .5s. And here's what you get. It's going to be great. Like, we have, you know, we've refined or added new cool features to some of these things. I blurted this out yesterday.
That's another feature, too. Sometimes the installation goes so wrong for some people. And a new version of the operating system, you know, a major number release. There'll be some fraction of people where it'll brick their phone, or it'll screw up their hard disk or their SSD.
Yeah.
And when your lifeline is your mission critical system at home, you don't want to be fussing with an operating system that's brand new. Let's get some configuration control going here during the crisis.
I like the idea, but I like the idea of like sort of slowing that down, and then next year, you know, make your triumphant return, and it'll look great. It'll be great. And, you know, we'll just have to see what they do. Right now, I want to shift gears here. And Dave, you gave us some interesting information about a really interesting guy, and I want to talk about that.
Well, so I was supposed to go to South by Southwest this year, and no one did, except I had the privilege of sort of going from my social distancing safety of my living room. And that is that parts of the South by Southwest Film Festival were made available to members of the press to screen for a limited period of time. And that window, to my knowledge, now has passed. It was extended a couple times, but I think it ended with March. And I got to watch a couple of movies that I very much would have liked to have seen there. And I always, you know, check out movies that are sort of in the vein of what I do. And some of that's music, and, you know, with like my Gig Gab podcast and that sort of thing. And some of it's tech. And I'm going to give you two quotes and then tell you about a movie that I watched. The first is a quote that's probably familiar to a lot of Apple and Steve Jobs fans. And that is, stay hungry, stay foolish. The other quote is, we are as gods and might as well get good at it. Those were both uttered by the same person, and that person is Stuart Brand. And there was a documentary that premiered in my living room because it couldn't premiere at South by Southwest. I felt like Kramer. It called We Are As Gods. And it's about Stuart Brand, who's still alive. He's in his early 80s now. And this guy, the movie is all over the place, but in a great way. I really hope that they get distribution for this and that you can all see it. The movie tells the story of Stuart Brand's life, which is also all over the place. He sort of explains in the movie that he has no real intentional direction. He just sort of goes with things. But this guy has been in so many crazy places and so many of the right crazy places at all the right times. The quote that I started with, "Stay hungry, stay foolish," the one that Steve Jobs really was inspired by and took with him throughout his life, came from the back of the last edition of the Whole Earth Catalog, which was Stuart Brand's creation. He also created the Whole Earth Electronic, the Well, and I can't remember off the top of my head how the name works, but he did it, which was an online community. The movie starts though with Stuart Brand working with a team of scientists, or interacting, I should say, working is probably right, with a team of scientists looking to bring back a woolly mammoth by way of gene splicing. And he is currently part of a movement that he calls de-extinction. And there's a great TED talk that you can watch. He did it in 2013 called The Dawn of De-Extinction. Are You Ready? Where he sort of goes through this. And that seems to be his current focus and passion of his life. But he's been, like I said, all over the place. He was with the Merry Pranksters for quite some time. He really kind of helped guide them too. He produced the Trips Festival in San Francisco back in the 60s, which was really kind of one of the first sort of multi-band things with music and light shows and all of that. It was one of the first venues at which the Grateful Dead performed in San Francisco and really helped define Haight-Ashbury as a community. And Tom Wolfe talks about Brand in the beginning of his Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test book, because Brand was part of that too. Fascinating guy, really articulate as you might imagine, very creative and driven, but comes across very genuine, like doesn't seem to have any predispositions about who he is or why he is. He just does what he's driven to do. And that has driven him to do a lot of really interesting things. Like I said, I hope this documentary is able to see the light of day, or the light of your TV screen or some movie screen somewhere in the future. Because it's just one of those fantastic films. It was on my list of, I will not miss this at South by Southwest. And when it was canceled, this was one of those things where it was like, dang it, you know? And then when they came out with this for media, I was so excited. And I hope that Stuart Brand was also the one in 1966, he asked the question, and he did it by creating a picture/paper campaign that spread far and wide, asking the question, why haven't we seen a photograph of the whole Earth yet? And it worked. It sort of spurred NASA on to say, we need to send the people a picture of the whole Earth, because it will allow them to truly understand the scope of what we are doing here. It's really hard for us as humans to understand something that we can't see. And so he asked this question, but this is the kind of person that Stuart Brand was. And it's where the name Whole Earth Catalog sort of catalyzed from and all of that. But that's who he is. He was part of, he assisted Douglas Engelbart with the mother of all demos that demoed hypertext, the mouse, email. And I've just scratched the surface of who Stuart Brand is. And like I said, he's still like doing his thing. So anyway, I know we could talk for hours about this. They talked for about 90 minutes in this movie. Yeah. So keep your eye out for it. We Are As Gods is the title, at least at the moment. But keep your eye out for it. Hopefully we all see it.
Stuart Brand. Yeah. And we'll have some links to stuff in the show notes on that. It sounds really interesting. He's an interesting guy. Like, the little bit I knew about him was the Merry Pranksters and the Grateful Dead stuff. And so finding out that he has continued to sort of be that dude.
Our world, especially this world that we're in, like right here on TDO and at Mac Observer, Stuart Brand's influence has definitely created this world. Whether it would have existed without him or not is sort of impossible to tell. We don't have a control group to look at, but he is part of it for sure, which is amazing. Yeah.
And he may actually be the world's most interesting man. It's entirely possible.
It's possible. Certainly he's on the list.
Well, thank you both for being here today. Dave, thank you so much for coming by to talk to me about Stuart Brand. This is pretty great.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And John, thanks as always for being here.
You're very welcome.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamon. I'll talk to all of you tomorrow. If you want to talk to us, you can get us at observations@macobserver.com. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and stay safe out there.